Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to your latest edition of Redmen Weekly. My name is Dan Clubb. I'm here to run you through all the best bits from Redmen this week. And we begin, where else do we begin? Of course, it's a final word after Liverpool beat Chelsea 1-0 after extra time, thanks to some Virgil van Dijk heroics. Yes, that's right, the captain leading us to his first trophy with the armband on. And Stee and the lads had a good old chat about how the Reds got the job done at Wembley first thing Monday morning.
In a defensive point of view for Liverpool is when Cole Palmer's save, shot is saved by Keith Keller. That was a, you know, I was saying this yesterday, Keith Keller's always going to be remembered for the 2022 final. You know, he scores a penalty and he makes some good saves. I think yesterday is a much better goalkeeping performance, all told, because he didn't have tons to do at all. You know, I think his defence marshalled him well, but that save he makes some later on, we can talk about it all now. It did feel like this was almost like an even better performance than 2022, given the circumstances of the game, what was going on around him. And I actually think, I know he made some good saves in that final, the ones from Mason Mount early on. I think the degree of difficulty of these saves is probably higher than those ones. The Palmer one, the Gallagher one, the one with his feet late on as well. It did feel like a, yeah, another, you know, another day when we, you know, we all need to change our focus now and say, you know what, he's actually done it in two League Cup finals now, this fella, and yet give him his flowers a little bit because he was exceptional.
Well, I also think he's going to be very important anyway, down to Kelleher's form, because I thought he should have done better on Wednesday night against Luton. So obviously I was a little bit concerned there. But one of the things was when he came back in, I thought there's something not right with him. What the difference is now is he's got proper minutes behind him. Now he's got a run of games. And every player is like that. Once they get a run of games, they get better and better and better. He's looking far more commanding in his box as well. He's looking like an intimidating figure around the strikers. He's making right decisions. He's like, is he 25, 24, 25 now, is he?
I think he's 26, but yeah, 26.
He was probably one of our most seasoned veterans yesterday when you consider what came on later on. And
25, you're right, yeah.
Yeah, 25. I thought absolutely brilliant yesterday. He didn't put a foot wrong the whole game yesterday.
The save from Palmer in particular, it just looks like that. That just looks like a goal. A second, you know, I think it's Conor Bradley does really well to deny Raheem Sterling. Chelsea get that bouncer ball. Sometimes you just need the bouncer ball in a cup final, George. It just looks like it's on a play for him. And it's a big, strong hand from Keller. Not only does he save it, he gets it away from his goal. It gives Endo a chance then to get the blocking. I think it was Jackson following up. And that really, you know, it's all about making an early save, give yourself confidence. It looked like he grew into the game because by all accounts, when that ball was bouncing, you're just expecting Cole Palmer to score.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I had a really good view of it from where I was sat, but I couldn't believe that he had saved it. It's just one of those where you assume that it's going to go in. It's so close and he did so well to get to it. And I think yesterday in general was probably the best we've seen Kelleher in a Liverpool shirt. I think it's his best performance and just again proving that he's the best backup goalkeeper in the league, if not the world, really. And you can't really ask for much more from a goalkeeper who comes in and only plays 10, 15 times a season. Really good.
The one from Gallagher as well, late on, that is, I think, I don't know if easy is the right word for the Palm one, but it's more instinctive. That is just, you're just sticking an arm out and you're in the right place and you know, well done. The Gallagher one, it's very late on in a cup final. Liverpool are stretched. He's one-on-one and you know, Liverpool obviously coach the goalkeeper a certain way. Alisson does it, they stay big a lot. They always say to Conor Gallagher, you know, you have to do something here to beat me. You know, I'm not gonna dive out and just let you dink it over the top of me or anything. He stays big. And again, it just felt like, oh, that's these young lads, these kids, they're gonna come so close, but ultimately Conor Gallagher, England internationals, gonna see them through. And yeah, Kelleher delivers again in right at the end in another huge opportunity then, a huge moment.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that all of the team defended well. Again, there wasn't really a particularly clear-cut chance that you felt Chelsea should have taken. But yeah, those two saves from Kelleher, really, it's all you can ask him to do. And you think it was very Alisson-esque, where you feel when we've got Alisson in, even if the defenders do get beaten, they've still got to get around Alisson, which is a huge task. And Kelleher yesterday was sort of just as imperious as Alisson often is. And yeah, incredibly impressive the whole way throughout.
I know, Ian. I think Virgil van Dijk won the official man of the match award, rightly so. Kevin Kerr, actually, the Liverpool vote won on social media, won that one. And you can see why, really. I said to Dan before the game, you know, Kelleher needs a good game, but you don't really want your goalie playing 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10, because it means you've probably been under the pump a little bit. Liverpool actually weren't under the pump that much, but he was still tasked with making... He made quite a few number of saves. A lot of them were from distance that were relatively straightforward. But there are two or three key moments there where, you know, he can go home with his medal round his neck again, thinking I've massively contributed here, because very early in the game and very, very late in the game, you can be caught with sucker punches in both of those moments. You do need your goalie there. And like I say, two very different types of save. One's instinctive, one's just a closing down of Gallagher, making it really difficult for him. He has another couple of good ones as well. He should be very proud there, shouldn't he, Keith Keller?
Oh, easily. He'd go home last night, look himself in the mirror and go, I did what I needed to do yesterday. Yeah. I was absolutely brilliant. We were never under the cosh, but they were big moments. And the big moments and big games like that are why we went on with the trophy. I just think in the big moments, we were better than them. I thought... I was on the phone to my dad yesterday and he said we outfought them. I also almost think that's a bit disrespectful to them, because we did far more than outfight them yesterday. We had McConnell coming on, turning Enzo, turning up £110 million midfielder. Just think yesterday was just, everything was brilliant. I wouldn't say I enjoyed it all the way around. Nervous, but...
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, absolutely incredible stuff there. Really, really massive win against all the odds, against all the adversity. Jurgen Klopp's men stroke kids found a way of getting the job done. And we move on to our Bias Football podcast clip from this week. And myself, Chloe, Chris and Paul discussed Everton's successful appeal from their reduction when they got the 10-point deduction reduced to just 6.
So let's start with the Ev. And yeah, David Ornstein, The Athletic, were discussing this one. The Everton on appeal have had their 10-point deduction reduced to 6 points. It's far from at the time, Chris, it was far from an in-depth article from The Athletic on this one. It was about 2 paragraphs. It might have been expanded. I'll get that up in a second. But yeah, it's not 10. It's they're up to
25.
Yeah. I stopped myself saying 25 because I can't fathom that it's nearly March. Why? Okay, 25 points and 15th in the league. That takes them up to. It's another fascinating twist in the tale.
It is a bit of a mad one, really, isn't it? Because I don't really get how they got to the 10 points. And I don't really get how they've got to 6. Is fine.
Yeah.
I still don't really have a great understanding of where all of these figures are getting plucked from.
Yeah.
Because I think for insolvency, you get 9 points. So if you were to look at it like that, 10 seemed harsh because they literally didn't go bankrupt.
Yeah.
I just don't understand how they're getting to the figures, to be honest with you.
I think the thing with this one is that...
It feels like they could have just said, if you break the rules by this much, you get this many points.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you just start from, I'm going to put these rules in place, this is the punishment if you do break them. Yeah. That would have seemed like a fairly decent idea at the onset.
I suppose. I mean, you're right, in terms of scaling out the punishment, it does feel a bit like this is something that they're working out as they go along, Dan, because it's... this will make sense in the fullness of time, theoretically, if they continue with this, because if what this now at least does is this lays out the shape of what punishments look like. And if they follow through on it, obviously themselves and Nottingham Forest, yeah, have got this year's punishments still to come.
Yeah.
So what that could be, as much as Everton are celebrating, it's not 10 points. They could find another 6 points deduction incoming in due course off the back of it. Mm. But if then that gives them a baseline, I guess, to work from.
It doesn't, because, you know, before today, prior to what we just found out, like 10 points was the baseline, wasn't, yeah, it? So is 10 points going to be the baseline again, only for that to reduce to 6? So I'm not quite sure. They made a rod for their own back in that instance, because 10 always felt harsh. And I think what was really interesting about it when it initially happened, the initial punishment, was that all the reporting from like the most respected journalists in the round the situation was that it was going to be 6 points. 10 came from out the blue. Nobody predicted 10. Like, it was very much like, oh wow, okay, they've really gone all in on Everton here. Like, they're making an example out of them and some. So it was a fascinating one, and the fact it's now been reduced to 6 makes you feel like, well, they kind of always wanted 6. 10 was like a bit of a, like, look what we can do, look how powerful we are, yeah. However, oh right, you're going to push back on that, okay, let's just do 6 and call it quits then. But it's a fascinating one. Ultimately, I think Everton will be quite happy with that. I'd say, well, 4 points back is 4 points back, isn't it? So it gets them out of the mire, I think it's fair to say.
Well, it puts them, as you mentioned, to 15th, Chloe. It puts them 5 points ahead of Luton, who are now in the drop zone. It's still, you know, 6 points is 6 points, of course, but it's an interesting to see how they deal with it, really, because they've no long, if everyone's settled on it and being happy with it, it kind of puts a bit of the anger to bed, I guess. As Ped walks past, like,
fuming.
And there's the dark cloud.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Chris was asking the question before, like, what happens now? Do you get a bounce from this being a good thing? Do you get a negative spiral from this because they've been using that as fuel for the fire? Yeah, it just feels like a whole lot of nothing. Ultimately, Everton have still been had points taken off them. They're back to being a really average to shit football team.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they can use it as motivation because they've been crap ever since it happened, to be perfectly honest. But, you know, it's 4 points back. That's in the Premier League, you know, relegation battle. That is massive. And I don't think any of us thought they'd really go down. Even with that 10-point deduction, I thought they'd be safe either way. But having those extra points back for their fan base, it'll feel much, much better, much, much safer. The interesting thing for me is obviously another one's pending. Do they get another 6 points? And what the hell happens to Nottingham Forest? Because I feel like they've spent more than what, I feel like they'll be in a bigger deficit in terms of money than what Everton were and how much they went over. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Forest. But yeah, for all of the other teams in and around Everton, it's absolutely horrific. Like, even Brentford, who we played the other day, and like, you don't really think about them as, yeah, they're sound, they'll be fine then. But now Everton are above them, and Everton are only 6 points off bottom. So, like, Brentford, all of these teams now are being brought back into the relegation battle. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. And if they've been found to break another breach, I assume another point deduction is going to happen then.
Yeah, just on the Everton put a statement out on this, saying they can confirm an appeal board has concluded the points deduction imposed by the independent Premier League Commission in November be reduced from 10 points to 6 points with immediate effect. While the club's still digesting the appeal board's decision, we are satisfied our appeal has resulted in a reduction in the points sanction. We understand the appeal board considered the 10-point deduction originally imposed to be inappropriate when assessed against the available benchmarks of which the club made the commission aware, including the position under the relevant EFL regulations and the 9-point deduction that is imposed under the Premier League's own rules in the event of insolvency. Also particularly pleased, the appeal board's decision to overturn the original finding that the club failed to act in utmost good faith. Because obviously what a part of this was, which I think that was a bit odd for me, because my understanding of this always, Everton were always quite upfront about the whole thing, and that's why
they were going to them and asking them, can we do this, I believe, and
they worked with them the whole time, didn't they, hand in hand, like, which ended up biting them on the backside, essentially, didn't it? Yeah, it's a really interesting.
Cover it up.
As it turns out.
Yeah. They've said they're committed to working with the Premier League with ongoing proceedings and what have you. And I guess that's their job now, is they know they've been done and they've been done. And that's, you know, 4 points is 4 points. It you get the feeling unless something wild happens here, they'll probably just take that on the chin, and they're hoping, I think, that cooperation here and a bit more clarity and actually sort of being seen to be like not making too many more waves off this might help them with what follows with the next one. I don't know, but that's going to be important as how Premier League moves forwards, because I said this all along, this feels like them getting the ducks in a row for tighter controls across the board with eventually tackling Chelsea and City. If you can't get it right with Everton, you're fucked trying to get Chelsea and City. You've got billionaires backing them.
Well, you know, the second breach that is being investigated, what is that for similar things the accountant said?
Yeah, it's all in the same wheelhouse, yeah.
Do we know the amount?
Well, Everton's biggest gripe wasn't necessarily the amount of money spent, it was where it was apportioned to.
Yeah, it was so interest payments on the stadium.
Interest payments, the sporting advantage has been their sort of most used phrase in the past like 6 months, because they maintained they didn't gain a sporting advantage because a lot of that money wasn't spent on transfers, it was spent on building a new stadium. So that's been their real bugbear, and that's what they've had to iron out with the Premier League over the past few months while they've got this appeal sorted, which has gone in their favour, if you like. So it's a really fascinating one. But as you say, 6 points now appears to be the new standard. But, you know, we're saying it's a mess, isn't it? Ultimately, the 10-point deduction was a mess from a Premier League's viewpoint. It's not a good look on the Premier League. But the minute you have to put an asterisk next to anyone in the Premier League, it doesn't look right. Yeah. And then you now have another asterisk because you have 4 points back. Like, it's very cloudy is what I describe it.
But the point is that these are last season's deductions. So, like, that's the biggest complication of this. This is for last year. This is for things that they broke last year. And they're trying to set these rules in place. And this is my thing with it. And it's easy for me to say because it doesn't affect Liverpool. You know, it's not happened to us. So it's easy to play, like, the rules are the rules card, whereas we've had plenty of problems with rules over the years. You know, it's just how we are as a city as much as anything else. But part of me goes, well, you've got to bring these in at some point and you've got to prove that these things have got teeth. And so I do find it a little annoying almost that there's never something's always got to be the first something. So not everything has precedent. Even things that have gone on for years and years and years, you can bring new stuff in and it can be unprecedented because you're trying to take things in a different direction. So Everton scrambling around trying to find examples of deductions and settling on the 9-point deduction for insolvency is the one that they can hold up against it is a bit mad, because I hope that doesn't undercut what they're trying to do in years to follow. So it means that it can't have teeth, because fucking Everton, instead of just taking the licks like they should have done and going, it's unfair that we're the first ones. It's just sly that you're the first ones that it happened to. In the fullness of time, if everyone subsequently gets punished that same level, that'll be what it is. But at the moment, it goes back to your point. They should have laid this out in the first instance. There's the rules and there's the scale of the punishments. So the Premier League
they've managed to make what is essentially rules and regulations which should be black and white subjective. Yeah. Well, I don't understand how they've managed to do that.
No. And I get it in so much as money's mad in football. Every football club's run slightly differently. There actually isn't a cookie cutter sort of one size fits all approach to judging these, because like Everton are building a stadium, for example, whereas lots of other football clubs aren't. So how do you make allowances for that? It's mad when you consider it, because the thing for all of this is this feeds into UEFA's rules. Ooh. And UEFA's rules are, and if and they're already tighter, and they're going to be even tighter in the coming years as well. So this is just the Premier League trying to prepare its clubs to fall in line with that, which is hilarious, because in some regards, these clubs have ambition to be in European football teams. They're going to get fucked 7 ways from Sunday if they ever get into European competition, because they're trying to broaden give themselves more wiggle room at domestic level. It's the whole thing. It's a fucking mess.
The other thing is, though, it's good that they got 4 points back, obviously, but does this just not mean that they have to get another 6-point deduction? Is that not what this is then? Because I remember when I was speaking to Toffee a couple of weeks ago, and they were saying, yeah, we think we'll get points back and we think we'll probably be fined for the next one. And, you know, Forest, who knows what happens with them. But it seems like this is good news that they've got points back, but also, is this just not telling your sentence for the next one that you're investigating?
It's very possible. And that's why it goes back to the 10-point for me. Felt like they knew it was going to get appealed. It's a bit, it's like anything, you know, you settle in the middle on anything. You want to show strength. You want to show that these rules have got teeth. And we saw that in the January transfer window. Clubs absolutely panicked and actually started spending more sensibly for the first time.
Apart from Forest,
we went, "That'll be fine. We'll figure it out." Or more like, well, we're already in trouble. We may as well be in trouble and have some good football as well while we're doing it. It always felt like 10 points was too much, but it was because if you go in at a nice, sensible 6 or 3, then that's getting reduced to a fine and people are going to go, fight. What? They need points deductions to be the result of this thing, I think, the Premier League.
What do you do if you're the Premier League? Because I think the Premier League give them another 10-point deduction.
I think depending, again, this goes back to how similar the situations are, because if it's exactly the same, then your 6 is pre-agreed. Basically,
who's it agreed by?
By the process of that's now been, we've given 10, it's been appealed down to 6, it's been accepted at 6, so you're not going to appeal the same decision, that you're not going to appeal 6 the second time if you've already said that 6 is fine.
If the Premier League believed that it was worth 10, wouldn't they just give another 10 out?
Possibly. But not
because it wasn't the Premier League that decided it was 6.
So that's
what I'm saying. Yeah. Aren't the Premier League most likely to just go 10 again? Because that's what we believe.
The same thing should, not too. Happen again, though, where they just go to them and say it's 9 for whatever it was that they went for, and then it gets reduced.
And moreover, they'll go, it was 6 for us the first time because appeals took it down to 6. And this moves to what precedents. And again, this is not set, and that's why it feels not proper. And I can understand how frustrating that must be from an Evertonian perspective as well, because your football club being messed with by a bunch of bureaucrats who are just trying something out. But yeah, it feels to me like, again, this is all being solidified down, and it goes back to a precedent. That's the precedent now. I think if that gets set and accepted at 6 points, then the precedent for what Everton did and anyone who does that or thereabouts is probably automatically an accepted 6 points moving forward. And
see, I think if Nottingham Forest get charged 6, not Everton, let's say, I think Nottingham Forest appeal it, and then it's down to a commission again.
Yeah, and try and get that reduced because they don't believe the 6 is fine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Yeah, interesting stuff there. I mean, I never really expected Everton to go down anyway, but I reckon that extra 4 points pretty much sees them safe, although there's another appeal slash charge hanging over them, so we'll wait and see what happens on that front. Yeah, it's the Premier League season of the Asterix, it feels like, a little bit. So yeah. Anyway, we'll move on now to Steve speaking to Neil Jones this week on our Journo Insight show. And of course, there's only one topic in town to discuss, really, and it was the continued impact of Liverpool's academy.
Obviously, Neil, most weeks when you come in, we always touch on the Pools Academy railings. It's often you've been down there, or you know, there's been games to go to. It feels like this might be one of the most significant first team games ever in the history of Liverpool's Academy. We've always had, you know, they've always been super proud of Gerrard and Alexander Arnold and Jamie Carragher, etc. But this game was, you know, it wasn't just one, it was like 7 or 8 of them. It's ridiculous, really. We all saw the pitch at the end when all the young lads who'd taken part in the competition got on it. And even on that one, Jones and Kelleher weren't on that. So there's even more.
Yeah.
Obviously, they were doing their own things and stuff. So you look at Keith Kelleher and you look at Conor Bradley and James McConnell, Bobby Clark, Harvey Elliott, Jaden Danz as well. The list goes on and on for the season. Do you think this is like one of the most proud moments that the Academy will have ever had? Because it felt like, you know, I saw Andy Kelly's tweet who does the press for the Academy, and he was, you know, saying how big of an achievement it was for them. But you can only imagine how they're feeling as well. Because it's quite absurd, really. If you look at it, like Liverpool just won a final with, you know, guys making their second ever professional appearance. Mm-hmm. It is remarkable that the work the Academy have done to get these players ready to compete in a final against, you know, a team who not that long ago were European champions.
Yeah, and a team that's renowned for its own academy and the production line that has, you know, terms of, not necessarily in terms of first team players, but certainly in terms of winning youth cups and winning, you know, UEFA youth leagues and producing multi-million pound players. So the fact that Liverpool were there, you know, having to turn to these youngsters in a lot of senses, but also not, you know, I watched back a little bit of the game. Obviously, I didn't hear the commentary, thankfully, on the day from Gary Neville, but I did hear him sort of say, one of the few things I liked or agreed with, he said a lot of managers would have left that drift and said, well, we've got Cody Gakpo on the pitch, we've got Luis Diaz, and we've got Alexis McAllister, and yeah, they're gone, so we'll just sit in and we'll play deep, but we're not going to bring a kid on in this sense. The fact that the manager did says a lot about him, says a lot about the environment, but also says a lot about the level of the players. And I saw Andy Robertson speaking in the mix zone. He said, we see them every day. He said, it's a risk, but it's not really, because they're good players and they're good enough to do it. I you know, Andy, as you know, Andy Kelly's one of my best mates. He's the press officer for the Academy. Barry Lutus is a very good friend of mine. He's an under-21s manager. And these predate those roles as well, by the way. I saw Andy's tweet where he didn't just list Barry and Mark Bridge Wilkinson and Alex Inglethorpe. He listed Marek Schmidt, the head of education, Caitlin, you know, the guys on the gate, the people in the canteen. And I think back to 2018. I sat down with Jurgen Klopp in New Jersey in the hotel on Liverpool's pre-season tour, and I asked him about moving from Melwood to Kirby. And I had a look at the quotes this morning, funny enough, on the way or before I came here, and he said, "We want to make it the football headquarters of Merseyside, where every player, every age level, is an outstanding footballer." And I am planning to ask him this later today. You've done it, haven't you? You know, you've done that. You look at it. You look at not just the sort of academies will always produce very good footballers, and you'll watch them and go, oh, I can't look at his touch, look at his, you know, ability to strike a ball or whatever. But Liverpool's academy is producing footballers that know how to play what the game dictates, so and what the manager dictates. So you look at the tactical awareness of James McConnell, the composure, the physicality.
The ball.
Yeah, the brave. I mean, we saw seeing the stat about McConnell, haven't we? With, you know, but don't forget, he's up against Enzo Fernandez and Moises Caicedo, and you can say that they're quite young players as well. But he's up against players like that and Conor Gallagher. He's, you know, players that he's got no right to be competing with, let alone dominating, and he's doing it. You know, I thought Bobby Clark's impact on the game was just staggering. I mean, people will know, regular watchers of this will know what a fan I am of Bobby. But even that surprised me in the sense of the level, the willingness to put his body in, to battle. You know, he clashed with Chilwell, didn't he, you know, in the game. Like, staggering. Jaden Danz, I saw him make his debut for the under-21s this season at Morecambe, 3 minutes off the bench in an AFL trophy game. That was his debut for the under-21s. Coming on in a final, I saw it. The only other player that's ever done that for Liverpool in the second game is Ian Rush. You know, okay, no pressure, Jaden, but what an impact he had. Two chances to score. I think he had a shot on target within 90 seconds of coming on the pitch. Massive kudos to those players, but also to the academy, because they're preparing players that they're not going in and learning the job when they go into the first team. They're learning the level and learning maybe to just be a bit quicker or whatever, but they've got the fundamentals of how Liverpool play. And I say this all the time, you know, you watch the 18s, you watch the 21s, they can be ebb and flow games, especially the 18s. They can be games where one half's unbelievable, one half's poor because the legs go or they lose focus or whatever. But if you sort of blurred your vision a little bit, you could think it was Alexis McAllister receiving the ball, or you could think it was Trent Alexander-Arnold bombing on from right back, or, you know, even the goalkeepers sort of have these kind of same tendencies. There's a clear pathway there that, you know, if you want to play for Liverpool's first team, there are just fundamentals that you've got to have. You've got to be able to play in a couple of positions. You've got to be able to receive the ball on the half turn. Yep. You can't just be a stopper centre back who launches the ball forward. You've got to have, you know, willingness to take the ball in tight areas, and you're seeing the fruits of it now. And don't forget, I mean, that pitch that you mentioned was significant for the fact that arguably the two best were injured. They could have been even more. You know, Stefan Bajcetic could have been there. You could have had Ben Doak in there. Obviously, Curtis was absent. I mean, the poster boy of the academy, the vice captain, wasn't available. You know, it's not just those people. Kate Gordon wasn't in the squad who's been around it. Early in the competition, we saw Luke Chambers playing. We saw Callum Scanlon playing in the competition. So it isn't just the case of those four or five who were involved on the day. All the way through this Carabao Cup run, there's been a flavour of Kirby involved in it, and I know a lot of the staff were there. I've spoken to a few of them, you know, people like Barry and Jay Spearing, and obviously Alex Inglethorpe. I know there'll be a few glasses raised on Sunday night, and so they should be. You know, they should be very proud of them, and so should the players as well who were involved, because it's one thing to sort of be prepared. You've still got to go out there on the stage, and there's every, you know, I don't think anyone would have had any kind of criticism of Jadon Dans if he'd have looked a little bit overawed, or if, you know, James McConnell had sort of played a bit safe, or, you know, whatever. I mean, just comes to my mind then, Gerald Quance's first touch in the cup final, you know.
What a little run.
Just, I'm going to go and play it down the line. No, I'm going to try and skin someone. And if I get tackled, I've literally just given away the Carabao Cup final. There's confidence for you. And, you know, don't forget him. He's 21. What's he played? 18 and 19 games probably for Liverpool's first team. So we sort of see him as almost a more established player. And this is his first season at that level. So fantastic. Yeah, I had a little... It did hit Andy's tweet when I saw it. I thought, I know a lot of those people, have dealt with a lot of those people. There would have been a lot of emotion, I think, from those guys, and rightly so.
Yeah, Conor Bradley as well, was an interesting one with obviously, he just starts the game and everyone's fine with it, which, you know, yeah. I think back 4 months ago, we'd have been like, how is Conor Bradley starting a game?
He made his Premier League debut on, was it the 20th of January?
Yeah, and I was starting cup finals and playing right wing in a bit of it because someone gets injured and he has to go up there.
And the iconic picture of
fronting the bench. And then, yeah, on the academy, Bradley's probably an example of this, really, is that it does feel like, and you mentioned before, they're not just making good players, they're making good players that fit in Liverpool's system. Like they all knew their jobs. So Bobby Clark knew, I'm a number eight, I need to be busy, I need to go and press, I need to get around it, I need to go and stop Conor Gallagher impacting this game, which he went and tried to do as well. And you look at Dan's, right, I'm leading the line for Liverpool, I need to go this and this. Yeah. But for someone like Conor Bradley to be an effective right back midfielder at times, well, because he was going inverted, and then go and be able to play on the right wing and know his job. I mean, the attention to detail there, you know, he's done all these different roles at Liverpool, but again, that was just another example for me of, like, he just knew what he was doing. Like, there was no confusion in his job. When he got the ball, he knew what to do. When he didn't have the ball, he knew what to do. Again, I'm guessing the academy coaches will take great pride in that, because, yeah, it's not easy to go and say, it's easy to say to Jürgen, Jürgen say to him, right, you're right back, here's what you do. I don't know how much he'd have worked on Conor Bradley right wing, but he seems to say to it like a duck to water.
Yeah, but that comes from knowing what Liverpool are, you know, and the difference with Chelsea, really, the difference with Manchester United at the time. I know United have got some very, very talented young players coming through, but you can imagine some of those young players are going to be asked to do different things in the summer when a new manager comes in. Same with Chelsea. At least with Liverpool, it's, you know, you're not going to get any surprises when you go up. You're not someone's going to see Conor Bradley and say, listen, I need you to stay behind the ball and you hit channels and you know, you don't go over the halfway line. You know that. Right, if I want to play for Liverpool's first team as a right back, well, it's obvious what I've got to do, isn't it? I've got to be comfortable going, you know, playing high. I've now, in the last 6 months or 12 months, I've got to be comfortable coming inside and playing into those pockets. I mean, if Joe Gomez is doing it, you know, that's testament to sort of the old phrase, what you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, you can, because you're seeing Joe Gomez playing more as many touches in midfield as he has at right back in a cup final at 26. So that's the value of continuity, but also identity of a team. I look at Chelsea's talent. It's not far away from Liverpool's level of talent in terms of potential, you know. And I asked a mate of mine yesterday. I said, "Well, what do you think you're going to do with that Chelsea squad?" And the message come back: enjoy himself. You know, there will be so much. You think about him. Give him Madueke. What would you get out of him with that? Give him Cole Palmer.
He'd love Conor Gallagher.
Enzo Fernandez. I mean, we know he would love Caicedo. You know, Levi Colwill. You know, players like that where you think. But why aren't they able to sort of imprint themselves on games as regularly as they come? And I think it comes down to confusion over what they're being asked to do, confusion over the way that they're put together with other players. There's never that with Liverpool. You know, even last season when it went wrong, they were still always trying to do the things. The question was, are they capable of doing those things anymore? It wasn't a case of, well, what's he actually trying to ask them to do? Why is he making them do these things? It was more a case of, I think, some of the legs have gone, or some, you know, some of the minds are a bit frazzled, or just too many injuries have caught up. There was never a doubt about the sort of philosophy of what Liverpool were trying to do. There hasn't been that with Klopp for, you know, the entirety of his regime, really, bar maybe the first part of a season that he was there. And that means when you bring a young player in, they don't have to sort of, you know, work out what's going on. They know, it's like, right, okay, yeah, I play in midfield as a number 8 for Liverpool. What does a number 8 for Liverpool look like? Well, there's countless examples of what you have to do there. You know, if you want to play wide right for Liverpool, well, you see Harvey Elliott, he isn't Mo Salah, but he's certainly done the things that Mo Salah does by staying wide and receiving the ball and getting into the same pockets of areas, putting the ball into similar positions. You know, you see that with Gerald Kwanzaa, a centre back, how the way he plays, you know, he's not Nat Phillips, is he? Or he's not sort of I'm trying to think of like a James Tarkowski or something like that. He doesn't play like that. He goes in and tries to play like Virgil van Dijk, doesn't he? And you know, that's the beauty of it, really. The level that everyone knows what you need to be in the Liverpool first team. Whether you've got the actual talent or the ability to get to that very, very top level is another matter, and we'll see with some of these players. I don't kid ourselves, all of these players are going to become first team regulars, but at least they're equipped when needed to go in and do it. And I think we're going to see a lot of them tomorrow night. Obviously, I think we'll see a few more of them before the end of the season in the Europa League, and possibly if they get through in the Cup. And at least we know now, don't we? I think we've known for some time, but it isn't the end of the world when you've got Jadon Dansley in the line. It isn't the end of the world when Bobby Clark's got to come on in a game, or when Conor Bradley has to start. It's actually can be quite a positive thing.
Yeah, thanks as ever to the brilliant Neil Jones there. And finally, myself and Dom from the Road End Pod discussed Jadon Dans and his two goals off the bench at Anfield against Southampton. We had a good old chat about the 18-year-old striker on our player rating show.
There is only one person that deserves full attention from us for the next few minutes, and that, of course, is Jadon Dans. Now, I obviously asked the Discord heading into this who their man the match shouts were, and you won't be surprised to hear that predominantly the name Dans, or a different variation of that, has headed in. So Josh Hall with Jadon Dans, CopBHK17, Dans, Barry4K, it's got to be Dansy, Symes, Dans or Clark for him. There's been some more as well. Let me just scroll down quickly. Hitching Bars, my vote is for Dan. Looks so mature for a teenager. Definitely a name we'll hear more often in the future. Dan says Dan's. There's a lot of Dan's there. Howdy, it's David, says Dan's. It has to be. There was one more. No. Okay, that was it. Jadon Dans. Like, unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. And a couple of people mentioned there just the maturity with which he's shown, not just tonight but in his cameos today as well. But he just I said it in the IMR, he's just a real goal threat, and he's come close to doing what he's done tonight even before, but he just looks the business. Like, what he does so well is he feels like he's always within the whip for the poacher. Yeah. Strikers talk about that a lot, don't they?
Yeah.
But he is that. He absolutely is that. And he's in and around it all the time. Even the goal we scored against Luton, Harvey Elliott ended up scoring it.
Mm.
But I was sort of more interested and more intrigued by the fact that Jadon Dand was running onto it.
Yeah.
And he'd have been thinking, this is it. This is my life done. And he was the guy about to strike it. And then Harvey Elliott nips in. It's a wonderful finish. You take nothing away from Harvey Elliott. But what we've seen there with Dand is that anticipation. And we've seen it again tonight. But talk about the goals, because the first one is honestly, honestly ludicrous. Like, to have the... Can I say bollocks? Yeah, to have the bollocks to pull that off in front of the cop is just... It's mind-boggling, quite frankly.
You've took the word right up my mouth. To have the bollocks to do that cop end on... I can't even speak about it, to be honest.
It's mental.
It gives you goosebumps as well, thinking about it, because, you know, we've all wanted to do that. And so many strikers have come to Liverpool and just haven't had the bottle to be able to do that. And he's come in, slid into the team, another player that doesn't look out of place, finishing like that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, 100%, mate. It's and the beauty of it is, like, listen, the first goal is right at the top drawer. It really, really is. Like, it's the run is something, and the little glance up to see the keeper's coming, when as soon as he knows he has, he then executes it. To have the ambition and the confidence of which to pull it off is one thing, but then the execution is another. We spoke a lot about Darwin Nunez's chip the other week, and different. Darwin Nunez is probably slightly
very,
more
very Cody Gakpo.
Yeah, United. It is. The United goal. Yeah, absolutely it is. Yeah, that little dink from that angle as well. It's very similar. Yeah, yeah, very, very similar. But again, 18 years old, his third Liverpool appearance. It's daft. It's daft what he's doing. He's showing mature, obviously, way, way beyond his years. And it's interesting because he obviously started out in the under-18s this year. He can still play for the under-18s, by the way. But he's made the step up to 21s quite recently and done that seamlessly. And now he's done this seamlessly. And obviously he spoke after the game, said, my dream come true. And you just got to be absolutely over the moon for these lads. But again, you said it earlier, they don't look out of place, and that was the definition of not looking out of place that tonight, because the goal is one thing, the quality, and he's obviously physical enough, he can handle himself, you can see that he's he's big enough, he's strong enough, he's quick enough, and above all he's got the quality as well. But it's the mindset for me. We spoke about his first goal just there, but the second one, in a way, and it's slightly odd, but it's even more impressive.
Yeah.
Albeit, ultimately, it's an open goal that he fires into, essentially. But to have the presence of mind and the anticipation, and the reason he scores that goal is because the defender's on his heels. Mm. He doesn't think there's going to be a striker sniffing around him, getting in front of him. So the defender thinks, OK, I can just deal with this when it gets to me. Jadon Dand's like, no, you can't, mate. You can't wait, because I'm going to be on it. So that, for me, we speak a lot about strikers' instincts and all that sort of stuff. He's got that.
Yeah, you mentioned before that he's always in between the two posts.
Yeah.
And for any striker to be in between the two posts, they're always going to be around a goal. They're always going to be bagging goals. But to do it at this level, what he's doing at that is just ridiculous. Now, I've watched him for the under-18s. You mentioned the 21s as well. He's bagging goals for fun. It's scary. It's very
different
scary.
Different types of goals as well.
Very different. Tonight, totally different goals. The first one, unbelievable finish, but the run off the shoulder was what really impressive. The ball by Elliott, fantastic. But then, like you said, to have the balls to dink him, daft. Yeah. But then the second one, you can't teach that. No. You've either got that or you haven't.
You're right.
You know, not only the hunger to get to the ball before the defender, but to be in that position.
To be switched on enough to go.
You're in the position there, and he's going to forever score goals, no matter what level it is. I hope it's at Liverpool, of course I do. But he's got it. He's definitely got it. So
it's exciting, man. It's interesting because also we've spoken a lot about this in recent weeks on different shows, because when you see an exciting young striker, your mind instantly harks back to good and bad in that instance, because there's been loads. So the polar opposites, you've got Michael Owens, Robbie Fowler, two others that I won't mention because that's just not fair. But Liverpool have had the fair share of him, of both of those, let's put it that way. But with someone like Jadon Dand, you think, okay, boxes wise, tick, 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 tick. Yeah. And then what's so exciting is that he ticks all of them for me. And one of the big ones that he ticks, this sounds a bit daft, but he's an aerial threat.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
And I think that one can go a little bit under the radar and be a bit underrated, because how many strikers you see come through who are good, very technical, very quick, etc., 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 but they might not be big enough or physical enough to actually handle it. And I know this is Premier League, it's not League Two or the National League, but you need to have a little bit of that about you. And he can. He can mix it a little bit as well. So there's real, real cause for optimism that based on what we've seen, albeit only a very small sample size, albeit he's been doing brilliantly in the youth side, as you say, he could well be. I'm so reticent to use terms like this because he's so young, but he could well be the real deal.
I think he's proven that he is. That's what you've got to look at it like this. Obviously, we're very early days in his like senior career, but from what he's done so far, you can't fault him. He's, you know, a striker to come off the bench and have an impact the way he has tonight, and to get man of the match, by the way, yeah, to score two goals, to kill a tie-off. I mean,
how much did he love it as well?
Oh, it's amazing. And even the interview after it, yeah, seeing a Scouser doing that's well, it's what we all dream about, isn't it? And we you know, we'll have our backing every single minute that he's on that pitch. And then, you know, Russell Martin looks absolutely depleted by Jadon Dance and Liverpool tonight. But yeah, it's all about him tonight, and he deserves every bit of credit that's going to come his way. Hopefully, you know, we will keep him grounded because we've got the right people at the club, and we keep easing him in. But he definitely deserves to be knocking on the door to say, what more do you want me to do?
Yeah, ultimately, like, yeah, you're right. He's in the round it now, isn't he? You know, obviously going to be without Diogo Jota, unfortunately, for a while. So there is, if Liverpool want to proceed with five forward options, you'd have to say, like, Ron Koumas is in this conversation, Kate Gordon's in this conversation, of course, but it feels like Jadon Dance might be leading that race now. And again, it boils down to that additional physicality in Diogo Jota. We've lost that centre-forward one. Jadon Dance is very much that centre-forward one. So, yeah, it's interesting. It wouldn't shock me and it wouldn't upset me whatsoever if we've seen quite a bit more of Jadon Dance between now and the end of the season. And that is testament to how good he is. And I said on the podcast the other day that it'd be interesting to see in the summer how many clubs are sniffing around him for loans. I'm sure they will be, regardless.
They were in January.
Exactly, and I'm sure it'll happen again. But I just wonder now, again, there's more to be seen yet. There's hopefully more to come. Right now, if I was Liverpool, I'd be saying no. You know what I mean? Like, no, he's ours. He's going to stick here, and we're going to nurture him. We're going to develop him because it's done all right so far. Sound? We haven't numbered him. After all that, I always do this, by the way. Always give it the big sell and never number the big player.
No.
What are we going to give?
I'm going to go 10. And I'm going 10. I would have went 9 to leave a little bit of a taste in our mouth to get to 10. I like doing that. But I'm going to go with 10 just because of the pure impact. The different types of finishes. The man of the match performance. Scoring at the cop end. He's done everything he could have tonight.
As much as I agree with everything you just said,
you're not going to.
I'm not going to. I'm going 9. Oh. And simply because, two reasons. Didn't get a hat-trick.
Oh, and always wants more, this guy.
And second, you've said it there, keep him grounded. And if he is watching this, or if Neil, his dad is watching this, then we're keeping him grounded with a 9, all right? Sad. Yeah, what an impact that. What a week Jadon Dance as well. Makes his first team debut against Luton, wins his first cup on the weekend against Chelsea, and then comes off the bench to bag a wonderful, wonderful brace in midweek. A really, really startling first week to professional career. Lovely, lovely stuff for him. Just a quick reminder, if you want to check out all the content, head to redmenplus.com. And if you do that rapid, you can get yourself a nice half price discount as well. If you use code FINAL when signed up as a captain yearly subscriber, you will get the 50% off that. If not, you have to pay full price, and that's up to you as well. I'll see you all again very, very soon. Take it easy.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.